When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hello everyone. Today I will be chatting with Dr. Myesha Claiborne. Dr. Myesha Claiborne is an integrative family physician, master practitioner and trainer of neuro-linguistic programming, hypnosis and timeline therapy, and founder of the Mind Remapping Academy. Through her live trainings, Dr. Claiborne teaches individuals how to master their thoughts, beliefs, and communication while eliminating fear, shame, self-doubt, and old trauma that interfere with their ability to experience full aliveness and live their best, most fulfilled, productive, and peaceful life. You will find her social media handles, podcast link, and website in the show notes below. In today's podcast, we talk about the best ways to communicate with our children, incorporating humor into parenting, and much more. Let's dive in. Just a little disclaimer before we start this episode. This podcast does not provide medical advice. The information on this podcast is for informational purposes only. No material on this site is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All right, everyone. Today we have Dr. Myesha Claiborne back on the podcast. Welcome again.
Thank you, Lindsay. It's so good to be back on. We had the best conversation the last time. I'm so excited to have another conversation with you.
Yes. I remember we were like, okay, well, let's schedule something in a couple months. And of course, you know, reschedule. Well, you know, life happens and you're back. We're back. And I'm excited about it. So today we are just going to talk very candidly about, really intensely about communication with your children and how important that is, especially as they get older, and just the importance of active listening and kind of what that is. So maybe let's open it up with just talking about what active listening really is.
You know, it's so interesting. I know that there are lots of definitions of active listening, but when I think about active listening, I think about not only listening with our ears, but also listening with our eyes and being very present to what the communication is that's happening outside of the vocalization that's happening. Because 7% of communication is words and 93% is everything else. And so when we are really actively listening, number one, we are giving the sense to the listener, in this case, our little ones, that we are present and paying attention, but also we're noticing the things that maybe they're not saying. Mm-hmm. We're noticing the things that are happening with their bodies or maybe their tone of voice. And that helps us to be able to respond in a way that is congruent with what's actually going on with them. Because we know, you know, our kids are in these various stages of development and they may not know how to say what they really want to say or what they're really feeling at that moment.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is just incredibly important as they get older as well, because your preteen or teen might really want to talk to you about something, but it might be something really hard for them. And you know, just picking up on those cues, like, is there something else here? There might be something else here that they're not quite voicing to you. And picking up on those things is so important. I also, you know, as you're saying that, I think that's wild that when you really think about it, this active listening with 7% of its words and then 93% of it is everything else.
Right.
It's just fascinating because I feel like in our current world where there's just so much distraction, there was actually, oh my gosh, there was this, it was like a, it wasn't a study, but it was like a poll where they had polled kids, teens, and their parents. And I can't remember, but there was like a really large percentage of teens that reported that they felt like their parents were always distracted with their cell phone. And I feel like this goes back to the active listening part where, especially as they have, you know, they're growing a little bit older, I feel like this is really crucial because as I'm starting to get, and my kids are getting older, you know, you pick up on these things, but your kid might come up to you and say something that you might think is really insignificant. Like, mom, there's no more, you know, Cheerios in the house. Are you going to go get some, you know? And if you are kind of distracted by whatever else is going on, it could be yourself and it could be something else. And they're like kind of leaning into you to like see if you're really actively listening to them and you miss that mark, but they really had something else they wanted to discuss with you. You know, I feel like I always did that with my mom where I would really want to talk to her about something specific, but I would start it off with something else, you know, because you don't want to go in there like as this ball of fire. You want to like start off with something else. You know? Absolutely. I want to like ease into this. Yeah. So I feel like that can be like so, so important, especially as they're getting older, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my son is 9 now, and I will admit, I mean, I've been guilty about, my son tends to come up to me like right as I'm in the middle of typing a sentence,
oh, of course,
and my
yeah.
brain can't stop the train of thought. Mm-hmm. And so I want to be able to listen to him. And at the same time, I also want to be able to finish the thought because the way my mind works, I will forget the thought. So that's a tricky balance, right? And so I have been guilty of being on my phone and my son comes up to me and then I kind of snap, like sort of like slap respond like, oh, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I've learned to do is when he comes up to me to say whatever he's going to say, it's like, let me finish this sentence. Let me just finish this thought out of my head. Let me just, I'm doing this thing. And, mm-hmm. as soon as I get done, and then I get done with the sentence and I can turn my head and say, so what's up? You know, what do you mm-hmm. want to tell me? And what it does is it helps to, number one, set the boundary of, you know, let me finish what I'm doing. And it also communicates to them, I want to hear you and just give me one moment. Mm-hmm. And then I can put my full attention. But then you have to follow through with that and actually finish the thing and put down the device and turn your head and give them your full attention.
Yeah. And, you know, we're all guilty of this. And like, it's not a bit, you know, I mean, we have to live our lives too. And especially when you have several things going on, you've got multiple kids trying to talk to you. It's hard, mm-hmm. right? And you can't always mm-hmm. just be like, okay. But like you said, I think, you know, if there seems to be something that you can't, you know, you know there's something else there, but you can't get into it in the moment. You know, like, hey, kiddo, like, I know it seems like you want to chat about something, but we can't right now. We have this going on, but mm-hmm. let's reserve some time later on, like right before bed. I'll, you know, come into your room. We can hang out in bed and we can talk, you know, like just like reserving, carving out that time and telling them, hey, like, I hear you. I see you. Mm-hmm. And let's like cut out a time to connect about this. You know, I think can be kind of a way around, you know, because it's hard. It's hard to always be present. I'm thinking about this the other day where I'm in bed, and this was, you know, recovering from this procedure I had. And so I'm just tired and cranky as it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I had all my kids coming at me from all these directions. I had just gotten everybody to bed. My husband was working late, and my oldest came in bed. I finally got laid down, and I was like, yes. And I feel like everybody knows this feeling, right? You're like, yes, I'm in bed. I've gotten everybody in their rooms.
Yeah.
This is great. I put the heating pad on. I'm in heaven, you know? And then my oldest comes in and she lays down next to me. I'm like, okay, well, there we go. And it's so funny because she wanted to tell me a story about school. And it was some silly story about school. Like I really tried to pay attention the whole time, but it was hard because she was like, telling it in this really roundabout way and like kept restarting. And then I got interrupted by my son. And like, and I was like, Olivia, like you've tried to tell this story like 15 times. Like, is there a point to this? Like, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, we've all been there. We'll all be there every day. It's hard, you know, but I'd love to hear what you have to say about how active listening can also help support our children to help create this safe space for them when trying to express themselves, either with us, like when there's conflict, or even with others as well.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I think can be very helpful is that space of holding the space, like the silences in between. When I say silent, I don't mean the dead air, you know, like the you can hear a pin drop, sort of harrowing silence. But when your body language is congruent and you're just holding the space, it gives them the space to think about how they want to say things. Because oftentimes I think parents can want to jump in and ask a lot of questions, and it can be very intimidating if a child is trying to share something with you that may be challenging for them to share. And so oftentimes with my son, and one thing I love about my son is that he begins everything with, "Mom, I got to tell you something." So that's like my cue, right? Yeah. He just comes straight in with, "I'm going to tell you something." And that's my cue to just, and then I can say to him in that moment, give me a moment. Like, for example, if I'm in the middle of a yoga practice and he says, "Mom, I want to tell you something," I will ask, "Can you tell me when I'm done with this? Can you tell me in the car?" And he'll say, "Yeah, I can tell you in the car." And then when we get in the car, I say, "So you said you had to tell me something." And then I just zip the lip, right? And I listen. And so number one, framing it in that way of, you know, like you said this earlier, if you're unable to do it now, say, you know, "Can we do it at this scheduled time?" But also, and that creates the, again, "I want to hear you. I see you," which that in of itself creates a safe space. But then the silence of just listening, the quiet, not the silence, but the quiet, allowing the space for them to say what they need to say, especially when it's, you know, something that may be hard for them to express, can be very valuable in creating that safe space. And then I think our reactions, like being mindful of our nonverbal reactions, is also important, because even, like I said, 93% is our nonverbal. So if our kids are talking to us and we're having these, "You're making these crazy faces," right? Then that communicates just as loudly as if we are to respond with words or with utterances.
So it's funny that you led into that, because my next question for you was going to be, what are some of the nonverbal ways that we can show our children that we are practicing active listening, and, you know, in that moment? Obviously, making a, you know, crazy faces as like what they're, which is sometimes hard depending on what they're telling you, right? Like, "Mom, I accidentally smeared poop on the wall." You're like, "Ah!"
That's different.
Exactly. But what are some of the, you know, like nonverbal things that we can be doing when we're really trying to actively listen?
Well, the first is to look at your child, you know, like whatever you're doing, when you're having a conversation with them, putting down whatever you're doing and actually turning your body towards them. Because even if you're listening, but your body's not turned towards them, of course, this is, you know, unless you're in the car driving, but like when you're, if you're at the table or if you're sitting on the couch, like turning your body and your face toward your child and actually looking at them, that is a sign that I'm here and I'm open and I'm with you, right? And then, you know, like letting your hands be at rest so that, you know, you're not fidgeting or doing, you know, and the fidgeting is sort of like that energy of hurry up. And so when you're just like allowing your body to be at rest and leaned in, that is a way to show that you're listening and looking at them. And then, you know, just affirming, sometimes a little nod of the head. You don't have to be a bobblehead, but, you know, just to like a nod or, you know, or go on or whatever there is. Or, if, you know, if there's something you don't understand, you might say, can you say more about that? Or, you know, like maybe, can I pause you for a minute? Because you said this, and I just want to know more about that. You know, just that is another, that's a verbal way, but it's the nonverbal way is just sort of like leaning in and not sort of like the nod of the head and looking at your child and really, and sometimes a, you know, a softening of the face can help. And sometimes congruent facial expressions to what they're saying, matching and mirroring is what we call it in NLP. If your child is telling you something about the day and they're having a challenge and you notice that their face is intense and you might like intensify, you know, show a little bit of that matching emotion on the face to let them know that you're comprehending or you're getting what they're saying.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because you mentioned this and it seems like such a simple thing, those listening are probably like, of course, it makes sense. Like, you'd want to look them in the eye and face. But think about how often you do that, right? I think it takes actually a little bit more just awareness than we really think.
Oh, yeah.
Even like my husband will come into my office and I'll just be like, oh, hey, but I'll still be staring at my computer typing or doing whatever. Mm-hmm. That simple gesture of turning the chair, making eye contact makes that first person feel seen, right? Mm-hmm. But I think in our society where everything is so rushed all the time, you know, it's just part of the way we live too. It can be second nature to just kind of move right along and kind of skip that part. And so you say it and it seems very simple, but I don't think it is all that simple, you know, but it definitely means a whole lot to the person on the receiving end, right? Especially if they are coming to you wanting to have a conversation about something. I wanted to ask you, and I've talked about this, I think, intermittently in other episodes. I think it's so important and something that I, as a mom, wasn't really aware of when it came to just parenting in general. I swear, like every day I learned something new. But one of the things that I think I felt really drawn to doing was just wanting to always have solutions to whatever my kid's problem was. And, and you know, when they're younger, it might be, I can't build this. Like, I can't figure it out. And then like, oh, well, let me just help you and I'll build, you know, you just want to find the solution because you see your child frustrated, you see them sad, you see them angry. And so when you see your child that way, you want to fix it immediately. Like, that's your parental instinct, right? And so for years, that's what I did. And, you know, as they got older and they had their own struggles at school, this obviously became a little bit different because you're not there to fix, right? But your initial instinct is still to fix. And so I'd love for you to maybe go through maybe a couple conversations or prompts that involve kids maybe, you know, having trouble, like whether it's at school or just away from you, and then how to kind of handle that once they're home and doing more listening and like validation as opposed to solving the problem for them. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. 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 And I will share with you, admittedly, this is something that I have actually learned in recent years as well, because, you know, it's like you said, we don't want our children to hurt or to be harmed or to feel pain. And also at the same time, we need for our children to build that resilience and to learn to problem solve. And so, you know, I've definitely over the last couple of years with my son have transitioned myself into more inquiry and waiting for him to ask me if he wants my input. And so one of the things that, you know, I might pick my son up from school now, and I'll give you a very specific example where I picked my son up from school, and most of the conversations that we have like this happen in the car anyway. The best conversations are in the car. we were driving home. This was actually to the beginning of this year. A new kid came to school, and the kid walks up to him. And this was maybe a couple of months into the school year. So the school year was established and he had transferred to the school. And the kid walks up to him and says, I'm going to beat you up. Mm. And so my son gets in the car and he starts to tell this story. This kid walks up to me today. This new kid walks up to me and he said, I'm going to beat you up. And I said, oh, really? Now, you know, there was the mom in me that was like, oh, wanted to be like, oh, really?
Oh, yeah? Oh, where?
Where he at?
Gosh, I feel that.
What came out of my mouth was, oh, really? Okay, so what happened? So then he starts to tell me the story. You know, this kid said he wanted to beat me up. And I said, no, you're not. Or he said he was going to beat me up. And I said, no, you're not. And internally, I'm like cheering in my brain, like, that's my boy. But I was like, oh, okay. And then what happened next? And he says, then the boy called me a name. And I won't say what the name was on air, but he called him a name. And I said, well, okay. And then what happened next? And he said, and I just said, dude, really? And then he just walked away. And I said, oh, okay. So how do you feel about that whole situation? And he was like, nah, I feel okay about it. I said, okay, well, you know, I asked how you feel about it. And he said, I feel okay. I said, oh, okay. Anything else you need to say about that? He said, nope. And that conversation was about 5 to 7 minutes long, and it was done. And so I just trusted, I mean, first of all, he handled it for me. He handled it brilliantly. Like I felt like, okay, well, I don't have to worry. He feels confident enough in himself to stick up for himself, to stay, you know, to stand up for himself and to do it with words rather than to do it with his, you know, his hands. And he didn't feel like his feelings weren't hurt about it. He, you know, it didn't occur for me like he was very harmed by the situation. And so I did, you know, sort of end up sidebarring the teacher on Class Dojo just to say, hey, just be on the lookout for a bully in the class. I didn't name him. I just said, there's nothing for you to do about it. I just want you to know. And apparently this is a kid that had been doing this with other kids. But like, you know, allowing him to tell the story without interrupting and giving advice. I didn't say, well, next time you should, or, you know, this is what you should have said. I just gave him all the confidence that I felt like that he handled it very well. And I actually even said that, like, wow, you handled that really well, you know, and then I just left it at that. And that's an example of how I just, rather than trying to put my opinion in or fix it or give him advice, I just held the space for what happened and let it be.
Yeah. And I feel like, oh gosh, like if your kid comes home from school and says that one sentence, I feel like your body wants to be like it, like you said, like what, where, like, why would they do that? And kind of like jumping to that very defensive reaction where you're kind of teaching your kid to almost like your kid handled it brilliantly. But if you had responded in that way, they would have thought, oh, maybe I should have done something different. Mom's real upset about this. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you really allowed for that space for him to tell the whole story. You didn't even know before he told you how he handled it, right? And that answer might be very different kid to kid and circumstance to circumstance, right? Like in this particular case, obviously, he did handle it really well. But you kind of gave that space to be like, tell me more about it. Oh, tell me, and how did you feel? And oh, at the end of the story, he actually felt pretty darn good about it. So it started off like, who do I need to, you know, talk to and how can I solve this for you, to like, oh, you handled it yourself and you feel great about it. So
this podcast episode is brought to you by Earth Breeze. Some New Year's resolutions are destined to fail. I don't tend to make resolutions, but instead I set a few goals for the year ahead. Lucky for you, I have an easy goal that we can all make and will make your life easier, be kinder to our planet, and transform the way you do laundry in 2024. Switching to Earth Breeze. Laundry is my least favorite chore in the house, and buying a huge, heavy plastic jug and measuring out just the right amount of detergent while getting goo all over the place can be pretty frustrating. Earth Breeze makes this process a little bit easier and cleaner with their amazing eco sheets. Unlike liquid, powder, or capsule detergent, Earth Breeze looks just like a dryer sheet, but it's ultra-concentrated laundry detergent. Just throw a sheet in with your laundry and watch it dissolve in any wash cycle, hot or cold. Earth Breeze fights everyday stains and odors and even gets out the toughest stains. I also love that Earth Breeze is dermatologist-tested, hypoallergenic, and free of bleach and dyes. It's perfect for every load I have, from bedding to towels and even my delicates. The best part is you'll never run out of detergent again. Thanks to Earth Breeze's flexible subscription, you can adjust, pause, or cancel at any time with no hidden fees or penalties. You will save a whopping 40% when you subscribe, and shipping is always free. Switching to Earth Breeze won't make any laundry day easier for you, but it can make it easier on the planet. Earth Breeze has planted over 150,000 trees and donated over 100 million loads of laundry and counting to those in need. If Earth Breeze doesn't end up working for you for whatever reason, you don't even have to return it. Just let them know it's not for you and get a full refund. No questions asked. Right now, my listeners can get 40% off Earth Breeze, plus a free welcome bundle. Just go to earthbreeze.com/lindsayfree. That's LYNZYFREE. That's 40% off your Earth Breeze Eco Sheets subscription. Plus, you'll also get a 3-month supply of washing machine cleaner and a laundry symbols magnet, totally free. That's earthbreeze.com/lindsayfree to save 40% and claim your free gifts. earthbreeze.com/lindsayfree.
And I think this can be where a lot of parents can feel like they are needing to be the problem solvers when their kids, you know, come home and there is some sort of problem at school where there's a bully or there's, they just, they're getting picked on, or someone says something that was cruel, or, you know, maybe their best friend said something that was like really offensive or whatever. And we kind of struggled with this with our oldest, getting better. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on how we can kind of cultivate that confidence in our children to stick up for themselves. So say that particular situation that you had with your son went a little differently and he wasn't able to really stand up for himself. Like, how would you have handled it?
Well, interestingly enough, my son is probably, you know, he's a good example to use because he's not new to being bullied. He's relatively small for his, well, I shouldn't say he's not really small for his age, but he has always been the shorter kid in the class. Mm-hmm. And he's pretty laid back. So it has made him in the past, I think, look appetizing to the bullies. and so this did happen earlier on. This was a couple of years ago when he was in a summer camp and he was experiencing bully happening on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And so he would come home and tell me. And after a couple of days, I asked him, I said, is this something that you would like some help with? Would you like to talk about or brainstorm how you might want to respond? And he said, yes. Mm-hmm. And so that was permission. That was permission for us to discuss what are some ways that you can respond to bullies. And I think that when we ask our kids and they say yes, and then we can actually brainstorm with them, what mm-hmm. are some ways? And I might ask, you know, so like I would ask my son, well, what would you want to say to them? And so then he might, you know, share what he wanted to say. And I would ask him, well, what prevents you from? So I do a line of questioning, mm-hmm. you know, what is it that stops you from saying, what are you nervous about? And then we talk about ways that he could say what he wanted to say without either harming him or without getting too much backlash, or that would make him feel comfortable. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think that parent to parent, that would probably be different. Mm-hmm. Because each child is different, but that's the way that I approached it with him. Mm-hmm. And so I think in building confidence in the child, we want to know what would make the child feel confident, or what words embody what they would want to say, rather than imparting our own views on what they should say.
Right. You're kind of letting them kind of come up with it.
Yeah, let them come up with what they want to say, and then practice, and then like role play with them. Mm-hmm. Say, hey, so now I'm going to be the bully and you're going to respond to me, mm-hmm. right? And then let them role play in a very light kind of way.
Yeah. You know, we've kind of practiced this a little bit with my oldest, but yeah, the having them kind of take the steering wheel mm-hmm. and come up with, you can give them the prompting questions of, okay, if this was said, like, how would you want to respond? And kind of using that, because then they're practicing it in a safe, where they feel safe, in a safe yes. space, right? And we found that it took multiple times mm-hmm. to practice these things before it's actually been able to put it into play. You know, so it can take children a while to get that confidence of, okay, I can actually like use this in the real world now, you know, but like the repetition I have found is, and you know, every kid's going to be different, but is helpful.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I think sometimes we expect that, you know, we give our kids this advice once and they're going to be like able to go right out there and do it the first time. But if you think about adults, I mean, we don't even do that.
No.
Right?
No. Maybe even less so, because we're so hardened into our ways, you know? Like, we're not as, I feel like kids are somewhat still, you know, like, I don't want to use the word like moldable, but like, you know what I mean? Like they just, we're like set in our ways and we're like, okay, well, I've been doing it like this for 20 years. Like, why would I change now?
Right. And so, yeah, you're right. Kids are, they're quite a bit more flexible and malleable. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing to understand is that when our kids are getting bullied, they're having a flight, fight, you know, freeze, mm-hmm. whatever response. And to honor that in them as well. It's like, okay, what happens when they do say that? What happens in your body? And then being able to help them to manage that in that moment. Do you need to take a quick breath, or do you need to visualize something, or what is it that you need to do to get you in the space that helps to regulate your body's response so that you can respond in the way that you want to respond? Mm-hmm. Because in that moment, when they're feeling, their brain is detecting threat, their primal brain is going to take over. And whatever that survival response is, that's what's going to happen. And so that practice at home also helps them to know, okay, how do they regulate themselves in the moment to be able to do that and build up that confidence? And that's why that repetition in safe space is key, because it helps them to build up their more automatic response to whatever's going to be said, especially given that their brain may be taken over by the amygdala, which is the threat detection system.
Right. And, you know, every kid's personality is so different. And our oldest one, avoiding conflict at all times is her thing. She's like, I don't really want to like engage in that. Like, which I totally get. Mm-hmm. I would avoid it at all times too, if I could. But it's so important to know how to handle it when, you know, you're, because inevitably we're all going to face conflict and it's important to be able to navigate through it. But I do think, you know, as you said, giving them that space to even come up with that scripting themselves is so important, even though, and I've done this where I'm like, okay, well, this is what you'd want to say. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's not going to be as helpful for them. And I don't think they're going to learn as much as if they're given that open space to come up with what they would want to say by themselves. And then the next time that happens, I'm like, oh, well, I came up with what I wanted to say before. I can do this again. You know, I can figure this out again. So that's, I always love to emphasize that, because I feel like it's such an important thing. And another one of those things where you're like, oh, yeah, that seems obvious. But when you're in the moment, sometimes you're, like you said, your fight or flight takes over and you're like, wait, what happened? And you'll kind of just divert to that immediate, let's fix this right now.
Yeah.
Instead of taking that slower pace to it and saying, okay, like, you know, tell me more about it. Tell me more about how you reacted and how do you wish you would have reacted, and all of those things, I think is, yeah, so important. So I talked about this very briefly with you before we started, but I would love to hear from you about how, I was telling you how, obviously, as parents, we have like challenging moments every day. Every day, some days are worse than others, and we struggle a lot. And I feel like humor can really help not only our kids, but also ourselves in those really stressful moments. And I've been kind of trying to train my brain to incorporate this more into my more daily routines, where like, okay, stressful situation is trying to get out of the house in the morning. And I tell them we're leaving for the bus, and you know, we have one kid who's like, oh yeah, we're leaving for the bus. Yeah, we're leaving. And she just slows down completely. Like she'll go like the pace of a snail. I mean, and I, deep down, I almost want to laugh because I'm like, oh, that's actually really funny that she's doing that. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
The second I say that we got to go, she like shuts down and she's like, oh yeah, we got to go. All right, well, try getting me out of the house.
Yep, I'm very familiar.
Yeah. And I'm like, did you just slow down? Like, I can't believe it. But, you know, making it more into like a humorous game or something, like, oh, wow, I can move at the pace of a snail too. And, you know, like actually trying to move at the pace of a snail and just like making them laugh or something is going to be, for both of you, it's going to get you off on the right foot, as opposed to you losing your mind like I have done in the past. I can't believe you slowed down. I can't believe this is happening to me.
Right.
Yeah. So I'd love to hear your thoughts and tips on how we can use humor within, you know, our more like stressful moments and handling tough situations with our kids to kind of make our kids feel safe and at home and in a place where they're able to share things with us and we can kind of turn it into something that can make them laugh.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, so I love the getting out of the house example, because that is just, I think it's one of those universal parent things that we all sort of suffer from.
Yeah.
Trying to get our kids out the house. Mm-hmm. And I imagine at any age, I mean, my son is 9, but I've heard the stories of from parents with teenagers as well. And so, you know, sometimes it's with my son right now, he's in the stage that if I say, you know, last one to the car is a rotten egg or something like that, then he's all in for the competition. Mm-hmm. And so it's really like playing into what you know your kiddo likes or what moves them. Mm-hmm. And so for boys, sometimes it's, you know, it's the competition, even for girls too, but for especially particularly for my son, it's like, I bet you I can get to the car before you can. And mm-hmm. he's like, oh, really? The gauntlet is down, challenge. And mm-hmm. then he's in the car, right? Yeah. And then we're laughing about it, we're chuckling about it, you know, that kind of thing. And then, you know, I think that's the biggest one for mine. I love yours. Oh, I can move the pace of a snail too. Or, you know, maybe it's a snail's race,
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, how slow can we both go?
We're moving the pace of the snail now. Let's see which of us can get which one of us is the faster snail, right? Yep. And then you're like doing the fast slow motion kind of thing, being something like that. So I think that making it into the game, but also understanding what is it that makes your child tick? Mm-hmm. You know, what is it that makes them tick? That will make it fun for them. What are they into? My son is into anime. Like what anime character could I bring into it? And so that's one way to make it into a game. Now, even like flipping it outside of making it into the game, I also put personal responsibility into it as well. So oftentimes, particularly when there's something my son needs to or wants to do, he knows how to get to the car quickly. For example, this morning he had a field trip. And you can better be sure he was ready and in the car way before I was, because he was ready to get to that field trip.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So there's that. Or, I will say sometimes, hey, you don't want to mess up that perfect on-time record, do you? And he's like, oh, no. I said, well, you know, let's get to the car. We got to leave at this certain time. And like having him be responsible for getting things done. And this applies to homework as well. I say, well, you know, this is your grade, not mine. This is your education, not mine. Mm-hmm. Of course, I want him to do the best he can, but I also, he set the goals that he wanted to set for his academics. And so I said, well, this is your grade, not mine. And so if you forget it, you have to deal with the consequences of that, not me. And then I just back off. And surprisingly, for my son particularly, that's effective. Now, that may not be effective for every person's child, because there may be some parents who would be like, well, my child wouldn't care. But the point is, what is it that your child does care about? What is it that's important to them? And how can you speak into those values? So we don't often think about that with our kids. How do you speak into the values of your child in order to help motivate them towards actions that are good for the whole system?
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, that can be sometimes difficult, especially as you're getting to know, you know, what makes your child tick. I have a child who, you know, if I did some of these things, they'd be like looking at me like, what? I don't care about that. That's not going to make me go faster.
Yeah.
So I do think, yeah, thinking about it and trying to come up with what you think would make them, you know, excited, happy, and ready to be motivated is so important. And I'd love to hear too from you as far as, you know, your parenting. Have you ever tried to incorporate humor into a situation that might be, I don't know, say, you know, your kid gets hurt or there's something a little bit more serious where you try to incorporate it into a way that kind of makes everything feel a little bit lighter? You know what I mean?
Well, I'm going to answer that question, but I do want to backtrack to something that you said, when we talked about, you know, one thing doesn't work for all. And I think, and coming back to this, what's important and the listening piece that you talked about from the beginning, it can be tricky to understand what's important to your child. But if you're actively listening over time, you will hear it. And I just wanted to like drop that piece in there, because I know there are parents that'll be like, well, my child doesn't hardly talk to me, or my child is, I can't get two words out of them. So when you're actively listening and making it safe for your kid to talk, even when they're talking about the things that don't seem important to you, like you said, you know, there's no Cheerios in the house, or, you know, something silly happened at school, or, you know, whatever the thing may be. When you start to really listen to those things that seem like they're not as important, they're just like the regular things that happen in school. But when you really listen to them, you start to hear, okay, my kid cares about this. Or, you know, like my son he does this thing called Kilometer Kids. He runs, it's like a basically young person, non-competitive track. And this on the way to school, he's like, you know what? I got to tell you something. Me and my friend, we're the fastest people in Kilometer Kids. We've gotten all of our punch cards. You know, they have these punch cards. We're on our second punch card and we're already 8 in. Right. And so like just listening to that, I know who's important to him and what's important to him. Right. When he continues to share those things with me. And so listen to the little things that your kids say, because then you'll start to hear themes of what's important to them that you can then speak into later on when you're creating these fun challenges or these things that motivate them mm-hmm. to do the things that really would be beneficial to the whole family, to them and to the whole family. So I just wanted to kind of bring that back around when you asked me about listening in the beginning. And then, you know, just to answer your next question, when it comes to things that are a little bit more serious, I'm very discerning about humor. Because I think sometimes when we put humor in places when our children are actually harmed, it can harm them further. Mm-hmm. It can make them feel like you don't care about their hurt or their harm. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very, very cautious about putting humor into places where I see my son really is hurting, because I'm not trying to mask his hurt right. just to make him feel better. I want to let him know that I hear him and I honor the space that he's in. And then maybe after the fact, when he's feeling a little bit better, if I feel like it's appropriate, again, you know, that thing that was harmful, even when he's better, it may not be funny to make fun of later or to bring humor into mm-hmm. later, right? But I'll give an example of what did work, like, and this just happened the other day. So being the imperfect parent that I am, the other day, my son did something and I got really upset with him and I raised my voice and it hurt his feelings and he began to cry and I had to, you know, I had to go and regulate myself. And then, you know, once I was regulated and he was regulated, we came back and we hugged and, you know, I apologized and we sort of made up. I'm a very apology mm-hmm. sort of like mm-hmm. positive parent, right? I'm quick to admit. So then the evening went on and I went during bedtime to lay down with him and to cuddle up with him and rub his back a little bit and, you know, apologized again. But then in that moment, I don't know why it came up, but I was sharing with him the way his cry kind of sounded like a whale call. So I said, you know, you know, when you cried, you know, you kind of sounded like you were calling whales. And then I did this, ooh, and he just giggled. So he just started laughing so hard. And so I kind of like leaned into it. He was leaning into it. And we were hugging and cuddling and laughing and talking about this whale call. He was like, maybe you should take me to the beach. And I said, yeah, I can take you to the beach and you can cry. Ooh. And he just like giggled even more. But this was a point where I knew there was some indicator there mm-hmm. in that moment that let me know that it was okay to make that joke.
Yeah. And that's like the perfect example of what, I love that. Because, you know, you kind of hear, there's a million cooks in the kitchen these days with people giving parenting advice. But you've heard this one a lot where, you know, your kid gets hurt and you sit there on the playground, they, you know, scrape their knee or whatever. I'm not talking about something big, you know, just like, you know, something they come over to you and they're crying and the immediate reaction is like, you know, something of humor. And so I was curious about your opinion on that because, again, I agree with you in that. I feel like we're not recognizing. We're kind of like jumping over that and being, well, just laugh this off. You're not allowed to have space for those feelings. But I do love how, you know, you waited. And that moment for you guys was such a great moment of connection, like a reconnection after something that was stressful for the both of you, right?
Yeah.
And so important for that, just like the healing process of, hey, we all make mistakes and this is going to happen. This is going to happen where like I lose my temper, I lose my, you know, my cool with you and you might do the same with me, but we can rise up and come together and say, hey, I'm really sorry. Like I didn't mean to do that. And then reconnect by making humor of something after you've kind of made it through all that. I think that was such a great example of, like exactly what I was thinking. So
yeah,
I love that. Okay. Well, I think we can start to wrap up. I don't even know how, I just glanced at the time. I was like, how on earth has it been an hour? I felt like I did this last time too with you. I was like, how did we already talk for an hour already? Is there anything that you want to add into this conversation of active listening and just connecting with our kids that you feel like we might have missed?
No, I think that we've pretty much covered it all. I mean, just circling it back to, you know, listening. And when you listen, when you listen actively, when you really are, you know, listening with your whole body and not just hearing words come into your ears, then you begin to understand your child better, understand what makes them tick, and be able to discern when to bring in humor and when to lead with compassion and honoring of their feelings. And I think that just remembering that, and also just giving ourselves grace. Like, we're not going to do it perfectly, just as I shared, you know, like being the imperfect parent that I am.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I lose it and I have to come back and apologize, and restoring that connection will also create that safe space as well, especially when you do that and then you shift and change your behavior. So I think that's pretty much it.
And I think just to kind of, you know, bounce off of what you just said, I think it is so important to be the imperfect parent. It's more important to be imperfect than it is to be perfect, because what's your kid going to do when they go out and they make a mistake? They're going to be like, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe I just did that. And they're going to be so hard on themselves because they grew up in this, well, what probably wasn't perfect, but was meant to be maybe looking perfect. Yeah. And I think our kids get so much more out of having those incidences where we have conflict and we're able to come back together and we're able to repair them. It's just such a great demonstration of how life is, right? Yeah. Okay. So, Maisha, I think I already asked you these two questions at the end of the other episode, but I'd love to hear if you have any other fun recipes that you've maybe tried recently that you're like, hey, you guys got to try this.
Oh, recipes.
Yeah.
I made this week, I made a black bean Southwestern salad.
Oh.
So good and so easy. And I'll just run it down really, really quick. So you can use one or two cans of black beans. And then you put like a half of a red onion chopped finely. And you can either use a can of sweet corn. I like to steam my sweet corn and cut it off the cob. And one red pepper, one green pepper finely chopped. And then you make a honey lime dressing. And how you do that is you take one lime, you squeeze it, you put one tablespoon of honey in, you put a couple of tablespoons of olive oil, you shake it up, and you put it in the mixture. You stir it all together, mix it all together, and it makes a delicious salad.
Oh, and it sounds so simple too.
Very, very, very simple. So that is the cool thing that I made this week. And then one other recipe, I won't run this one down because it's a little bit more complicated, but I made a great corn chowder.
Yum. Ooh.
Sweet corn chowder.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. I love that. Did you make it in did you make it on the stovetop, or did you make it in like a,
an Instapot?
Yeah.
I actually made this one on a stovetop, and it's a creamy corn chowder. So I made it on the stovetop. And what I did was I took some of the corn out and blended it to make it creamy with some cashews, because I don't do full dairy. So I use cashews to make it creamy, but I leave some of the corn in there so you give it some texture.
Yeah.
So good.
Oh my gosh.
So good, Lindsay.
That does sound good. I'm right now I'm on the hunt for, I don't know what my obsession is recently. I think it's because I was at this little bookstore the other day and had like the best lentil soup. And now I'm on the hunt for like an amazing lentil soup recipe. So I think I'm going to trial a couple and see what happens. I don't think my kids will eat it, to be honest. I will hope that they do, but it's mostly just for me.
Well, let me know when you find it. Send it over, because I love me some lentil soup.
Yeah, lentils are so great. Like, they're like so incredibly high in fiber and protein. Mm-hmm. And like, I just think they're so underrated. Like, I never even really knew of their existence until I was much into adulthood. And I was like, oh, we got to eat more of these things.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Maisha, for coming back on the podcast. As always, you are such a pleasure to chat with, and I feel like could chat with forever. So thank you for taking time out of your busy life.
Thank you for having me. I love having conversations with you. They're just so fun.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. All resources mentioned in this episode can be found in the show notes on lindsayandco.com. To continue these important conversations, head over to Motherhood Meets Medicine on Instagram. Let me know what you learned from this episode and who you would love to hear from next. I always love getting feedback from you. If you're finding value in this podcast, please rate, review, subscribe, and share with a friend. This will help us to reach even more women from around the world. I'll catch you next week. Until then, don't forget to find some time to unplug, unwind, and have a little fun.